Okay. Go ahead and call the committee back to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Vice Chair Keenan.
He's here somewhere.
Representative Beatty.
Here.
Representative Binkley.
Here.
Vice Chair Cafaro. Representative Kirk Harpender.
Here.
Chair.
Representative Falk.
Excused.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Excused.
Representative Gillette.
Excused.
Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hastings.
Here.
Representative Hellegarde.
Here.
Representative Hopkins.
Here.
Representative Keough.
Here.
Representative Mercer.
Here.
Excused.
Representative Moore.
Here.
Representative Nave.
Here.
Representative Stuart Paragoy.
Excused.
Representative Reed.
Excused.
Representative Regeer.
Excused.
Representative Schillinger.
Here.
Representative Tuss.
Here.
Representative Windy Boy.
Excused.
Chair Jones.
Here. We do have a quorum present. So we have two bills to hear, but hopefully three executive actions. We will begin with, I believe, House Bill 45, since, is that your bill, sir? Or I can switch them. You are 45. All right, well, let's hear from House Bill 45, the 45 on the
let's
Vice Chair.
Let's hear it for House Bill 45. Yeah! Yeah! I was 45 once. Almost 45 twice. Good afternoon, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 45. My name is Bob Keenan, Big Fork. Let's see, House District 10. And what we have is a very simple fiscal note, pretty run-of-the-mill, one FTE, and we'll negotiate later in the session as to whether that stands or not. But this... Yes. This bill represents the solution to a legislative audit. This bill is the request of the Department of Public Health and Human Services, and this bill is the result of collaboration between the department and an association that represents the hospitals in the state of Montana. And with that, that's it. I want to have the quickest, shortest, easiest, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there proponents to the fiscal note?
Good afternoon, Chairman Jones and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kim Aiken, and I am the Chief Financial Officer for Public Health and Human Services. Thank you, Representative Keenan, for sponsoring House Bill 45. The department rises in support. This is a bill brought forward at the request of the agency because of a recent audit, as we just previously heard. On the fiscal note, the number of facilities required to report under this bill is significant and results in a request for an additional resource to review and inspect records submitted by healthcare facilities. While the type of information being reviewed was narrowed because of amendments, it doesn't alleviate the department's need to review, respond, and regularly assess whether facilities have established a community benefit policy. As Representative Keenan previously indicated, the fiscal note associated with this bill requests one compliance specialist to review current and future community benefit and charity care plans. In closing, House Bill 45 is a response to the findings from a legislative performance audit performed in 2020. This bill strengthens existing policy the department already operates under and creates a need for an additional resource to be dedicated for ensured monitoring and compliance. The department supports this bill and appreciates the work of the sponsor and impacted stakeholders to help us come into compliance with the audit findings. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents.
Chair Jones, members of the committee, Dwayne Pressinger, last name spelled Pressinger, with the Montana Hospital Association, in support of the bill and the compliance specialist as required by the department. Thank you.
Additional proponents. Are there proponents online? Seeing none. Are there opponents? Opponents online? Seeing none. Informational. Okay, seeing none. Questions from the committee? Representative Nave.
No, I didn't have a question.
I'm sorry, I thought you raised your hand.
Oops.
So, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for the bill sponsor.
Representative Keenan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keenan, I am wondering, as I read this bill, it's not the most robust bill in my mind.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillette, not yet.
Okay.
It has a couple more stops.
Okay, so then maybe I'll just settle in to the one FTE, because as I see it, I mean, greater could probably
Mr. Chairman,
get that work done. It's just not that complex.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillette, I think I know where you're going, and I couldn't agree. I think that this will fall under the Office of Inspector General, which is pretty much a new piece of DPHHS following the reorganization that took during the interim. They have 90 FTEs currently, about $9 million a year in a budget. That's about about $2.75 million in general fund. I had my reaction probably is yours. I know that every division in DPHHS has some training funds that are available through the biennium. Very little of that is spent. It's not reverted, but towards the end of the year, upper level management can find a little training session in Tampa or something, and that seems to be the case, which maybe an audit will find out about, and I don't know that that's a community benefit for the Department of Public Health and Human Services either. At any rate, this solves the audit problem, and the FTE, as I'm sure the chairman can explain, will become part of a negotiation at the 11th hour of the legislature as to how many FTEs are identified in these fiscal notes and how many eventually are approved.
Lovely. Thank you.
Additional questions? Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In keeping with the tradition of this committee, whenever we have a fiscal note less than $100,000, I have about 45 more minutes of questions for the sponsor.
My wife says I don't have a filter, but I'm filtering right now.
That's right.
Feel
free to not ask questions. Are there questions? Representative Mercer, do you have an amendment?
No amendment, but I do have a question. So I want to question and answer with Representative Gillette was a little too cryptic. I wasn't sure I was following it. So are we likely to see this bill coming back? Is it likely to be amended on the Senate side such that we will get another crack at this if we think that maybe there need to be reporting requirements or anything like that? It seems like it doesn't have a lot of detail right now. And I know this is an area of great interest for many of us.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, yes. Let's see, where do I start with that? I do believe that this will have further scrutiny in the Senate and possible some amendments. This bill, as it stands right now, is in answer. And I really appreciate, honestly, I truly appreciate the department coming to us with this bill. I'm a fan of the Legislative Audit Division, and the internal control findings have been multiplying, and the financial compliance audits have been growing and growing and growing, and they have made great progress in cutting that back and addressing that issue. This particular charity care community benefit audit was prioritized by the audit committee probably 4 years ago, and then it finally came forth. This bill, though, is a collaboration at this point in time between an association that represents hospitals and the department. And I know that there are a lot of legislators that look at this bill and think, what about us? Where do we get reported to, or when do we get to gnaw on this bone? And I think I've talked to some people in the Senate, and they have interest in that. That's a warning. And it'll be under further scrutiny, and I'm sure that we will see it again, so that we don't have to, as a legislature, in 2 years, put our input in it at the risk of losing the bill, because it's important to check it off the list after the audit and make progress. But at this point in time, it's a kumbaya between the department and the association that represents hospitals.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have another question, but I know that there are a few of us on this committee that aren't Section B folks that will look forward to the opportunity to participate going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Representative Hamilton.
Now the hands are popping up.
Well, this time I remember I said your name first so I can say Representative.
Can I pick?
Even though he hides his deal behind his dip.
We didn't plan this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the sponsor. Actually, it's not a question. It's a comment. I just didn't want the sponsor to feel bad that I'm not going to ask him any questions. And it doesn't have to do with disfavor of the bill or disfavor of him.
I feel better now.
Representative Tuss.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, could you expound on that a little bit, please?
No, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question for the sponsor. I know the Hospital Association stood up in support of this, but could you tell us what additional burden, if any, there will be on Montana's hospitals, financial responsibility or human services, administrative burden in carrying out what they need to be doing with this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuss, very little, if any, at this point in time. All of the documents that are required, if you look in Section 2, you will see that there's $1,000 a day fine for the entities should they be late in putting forth these documents that are required by the feds, basically. Annual from the IRS and every 3 years, I think it is, from HHS at the federal level. So there's nothing onerous and specific to Montana requirements. They won't have to have any more accounting or legal teams or anything like that. It's at this point in time, it's pretty clean with the reporting that's required by the feds.
Okay, seeing no additional questions, would the sponsor like to close?
I will. Thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, that closes the hearing on House Bill 45, and we are now on House Bill 190. Where is our sponsor here? Who is our sponsor? Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Mercer. I represent House District 46 in Billings, Montana. And I am here today on 190 and sticking to the fiscal note. You know, the first thing I want to mention is that the plain language of the bill requires that agencies meet these responsibilities out of existing resources. That's Section 8. And I realize the fiscal note doesn't suggest that that is something that can be done. What I want to say in response to that is that we had this same discussion 2 years ago about whether it would be possible for agencies to essentially have a suck-it-up amendment that would allow them to do it. And the answer at that time was, well, the agencies really, many of them have never embarked upon this sort of endeavor, and so it's going to be time-consuming. We find ourselves now 2 years into the administration, and I think you'll hear from one of the directors about what has happened as part of the efforts to do some goal setting and some measurement. And admittedly, it I think at this point is in its infancy. But once again, I think that this fiscal note drastically overstates what the costs will be. The costs have gone up quite a bit from where they were projected when they seemed excessive last time. As I said back then, that DOT on its own thought it was going to cost $500,000 to do strategic planning. And that seemed a little out of whack. And I think that the current fiscal note suffers from some of the same infirmity. I will also note that we're going to get an amended fiscal note because the based upon some of the advice we heard in the State Administration Committee, we tried to do a few things that were different. One of the things that we were told was a three-year strategic plan, something that had that long of duration was likely to not let agencies be nimble enough. And so the thought was it would be better if it was something that they could update every 2 years. I think that requirement is designed to say it can't be as exhaustive. It needs to be something that is on a shorter timetable. I think for that reason, some of the items here in the original fiscal note are overstated. But I come back to where I started, which is I think that this is something that should be done out of existing resources. I think this is something that some of the agencies have started doing already. We just need to internalize and codify the requirements so we can actually get to the finish line. And I'm going to save everything else for closing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions from the committee? Oh, wait. Are there proponents? Proponents online. Are there opponents?
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Chris Dorrington, D-O-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. I'm the director at Montana DEQ. And with all due respect to the good representative and his efforts to try to get us to be more measurable, I do stand in opposition to the bill, but also speaking to the fiscal note, I just kind of begin at the beginning. Representative Mercer has seen our efforts that we have, at least a handful of agencies have shared what the governor on the executive side is requiring of us, which is called an OGSM. It's an objective, goals, strategies, and measures. We do a six-month sprint. We also have a two-year plan with the OGSM. With Representative Mercer having seen it, he still brings a bill, which then necessitates that what we're currently doing isn't enough. So then if it's not enough, we have to do additional work. And that's where the fiscal note comes from. The basis of the fiscal note is a systematic effort across all state agencies, including solicitation of great solutions from within the agency. I wholly support that and currently do that with my group. It requires public notice with annual reporting. The public notice requirement, that alone to notice it and hold meetings, is going to require some effort that we don't currently do. Annual reporting will take some time and effort. And if not well done, we're going to report to interim budget committees with garbage, and we don't want to do that, so it requires effort to do it well. If under the provision of Section 8, as Representative Mercer had shared, we do this with existing resources, I'm going to take someone who, a scientist or an engineer, off of their current permitting or compliance project management work and have them work on this. And to be frank, I stand before every other committee during session and try to defend whether we're doing well in those areas. And I think taking one out to do a strategic plan has limited benefit beyond what we're currently doing. And I'd be happy to answer questions. I vote no on the bill, but definitely support the fiscal note. And an amendment is coming, as you noted. Thank you.
Okay. Additional opponents. Are there informational witnesses? None online, none in the audience. Questions from the committee. Representative Kerr Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sponsor, I was just wondering if you could help us understand what you said that there was an amendment coming. I would expect nothing less, honestly, but I was just curious what we could expect.
Representative Kirk Carpenter, I'm pleased to say it's not an amendment from me. I expect an amended fiscal note because the bill was amended in state administration. And so all of the strike-throughs and the additions that you see in the bill are changes to the bill. So here's a good example. So one thing state administration said was, we really don't want it to be a strategic plan that sits on a shelf. We want it to be something where it seems action-oriented, it seems shorter in timetable, it seems like something that will lead to deliverable results on a shorter timetable. And the argument was made, the private sector's moved away from three-year strategic plans to a shorter period of time. And so you'll see on page three that we lowered the requirement from 3 to 2. And the whole idea there was to say, this is something that we want to try to get started. It is, as the director just said, the administration is probably more comfortable with a shorter time frame than a longer time frame. And so that's one of the things that would change the fiscal note. One of the other things that the amendment did was preclude public comment on the first strategic plan. So the first strategic plan would be due on September 1st of this year. Let me change the phraseology. The first department plan would be due on September 1. And the thought was there's not going to be enough time to put this out for public comment, let the public weigh in. We'll not have that requirement in the first 2 years. So obviously, when you look at there, as the director talked about, there will be no need to put a notice out, say, hey, public, if you have something that you want to say in response to this plan, that's not going to happen in 2023. So whatever costs were projected as going to be incurred here are not going to be incurred. Those are just some changes. So the amendment is not an amendment to the bill. It's an amended fiscal note that will be tied to the changes that were made in the state administration.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And do you think this, the amended fiscal note, is going to go up or down?
Well, I think it'll go down. Sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative Kirk Carpenter, I think it'll go down.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Nave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor. Mr. Sponsor, I imagine that you have seen these OGSMs from probably some of the Section D agencies. Can you explain for the committee what the difference between a true strategic plan and what the OGSM that they're preparing actually is?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nave. Thanks for the question. There, I may not get all the different items listed here. The first thing about the OGSM process is it's not looking at the department's programs as a whole. So you think about the work that we did in Section D with the Department of Corrections, and the Department of Corrections has multiple programs, and it's got a number of different things that it needs to say with respect to this program. We have this goal. We want to achieve this within the next 12 months. We hope to achieve this in the next 2 months. And we actually are going to have a quantitative measure that's going to be attached where possible. We all know there are going to be some things that aren't susceptible to quantitative measures. I think that what I've seen in most of the goals work that's been done so far, there are very few quantitative measures, even where it's, I think, feasible to do quantitative measures. So, for instance, on DOJ, we kept hearing, well, we are unable to help local law enforcement. When DCI says we'd like to help local law enforcement more, but we just don't have the bandwidth. We heard the same thing from Prosecutorial Services Bureau. It would be very easy to say our goal is to satisfy the requests from local law enforcement in all but 30% of the cases. Now, they may not achieve that, but because they have no idea what the denominator is going to be. But it's that sort of thing. I think what I've seen so far is there's very little quantification. So that's going to be one of the things that will be achieved here. But I think probably the most significant thing is it's going to try to be a program-wide focus. It's going to try to say, this may not be your most important program, but you still, if it's one of your programs, you've got to have goals and objectives because you need to know where you want to end up on each of the programs. So I think that probably will be the most significant change. And I just want to add to that, this is an evolving process. I am sure that what we see on September 1st, 2023, some of us may look at it and say, this isn't quite what we were thinking we would get, just like we weren't all that impressed with what we saw when we got the dump of information as part of the budget process back in September. Mm-hmm. But I think the administration is making good faith efforts here. I think they're trying to make progress. I think this will continue to help in that process. And as I've said now 1,000 times, this is about codifying something that is going, it's not something that applies to this executive branch. This is something that if we're looking out at, you know, 2035, we want to be able to have said we've changed the nature of state government. And all those handouts I had on your desk, New Mexico, places like that, and I credit Representative Gillette because I think she was the one who had initially found this stuff from New Mexico. You can tell that this is very much part of the culture in both the executive branch and the legislative branch. That's what we need to try to do, mm-hmm. regardless who the governor is.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
This is from Mr. Dorrington.
Mr. Dorrington.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nave.
Yes, Mr. Dorrington and Mr. Chair, in preparing strategic plans, it has been my experience that your scientists and engineers will no doubt need to make some inputs, but they are not who prepares this plan. This is a leadership issue. And so while I'm not pointing my finger at you personally, I'm expecting that you have some sort of an upper-level staff who can be pulled together to do this.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can absolutely assign a task to someone that's already completely full with tasks to do this and not do something else.
Okay. A follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
How would you go about prioritizing the kinds of things that they are currently doing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nave, I have a particularly talented individual. There's my public policy director. She's responsible for tribal relations, Montana Environmental Policy Act, Montana Facilities Major Siting Act. She's our public information officer. That's probably the person who is would be most gifted in also knowing the agency. Her task list is completely full with those other duties, so I would probably remove, something that it isn't currently pressing, albeit it would just become pressing in another day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beatty.
Thank you, Chairman Jones. First question for the sponsor.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Chairman Jones. Representative Mercer, I'd like you to help me understand how it could be that I could make an amendment to this bill. Oh, excuse me. I was channeling Mercer. Sorry. Trying to be serious now and not frivolous with our time. I take it that you would expect, the product that you would expect would be a thorough table of all of the programs that are supported within a given agency. That the idea of programs being a matter of definition, I suppose. Is that the way you envision this? I think you had alluded to, and I think I kind of infer this from the fiscal note, that there's sort of a holistic approach, and I think you're seeking to dive a bit deeper.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beatty, yeah, I think the best way for me to answer that question is when we go through the hearings in the subcommittees, I think agencies come in and they say, you know, we have program one, and within program one, here's everything that we're doing within program one. And just to go back to the Department of Justice, if we're talking about the legal affairs side of the shop, it's everything from the Prosecutorial Services Bureau that's out trying to work with county attorney. You heard a lot of these people that came in on House Bill 462. You've got the civil people that are defending the state when it gets sued and occasionally bringing cases on behalf of the state, but you have the Prosecutorial Services Bureau. You've got a whole array of different programs within Program 1, and the idea would be to say, what are your goals for those programs within the program? it's not, a strategic plan doesn't say, we do 52 things in these agencies, but we're going to identify two things in our department plan that we want to say we have goals and objectives and measurements for those two things. This is designed to say, you know, if we have appropriated money for you to do X, tell us what it is that you want to achieve with respect to that appropriation, how you're going to measure it, and where possible, how you're going to be able to quantify it. So I think if they are running a program, we want them to be able to say, this is what we want to achieve pursuant to this program.
Follow up.
Yeah, so this sort of bears to the fiscal note and the level of effort that would be required in an agency. And let me preface this with I appreciate your approach to this. It seems to me, though, that some activities of a department would certainly be more important than others and that ought to be prioritized in terms of this effort. So if an agency is strapped for resources, let's stipulate that that's the case, then I would expect them to devote their time to designing the metrics that are relevant to their most significant programs. Would you agree with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beattie, I do agree with that. I think there are probably some functions that aren't going to be as significant to the overall mission of the agency. So yeah, I agree with that. But I also want to divert you to this DNRC estimate in 12A of the fiscal note, 1,500 staff hours to do the first report. And if you just sit down and say, okay, how many people are we talking about that would absorb 1,500 staff hours? And again, remember, this is already in an executive branch that's 2 years in to their version of OGSM. I've done a lot of strategic planning in both the government and in nonprofit organizations. 1,500 hours to put together a plan? I don't think so. I don't think it will take anything close to that. So that's why I don't put a whole lot of credence in the fiscal note. But to come full circle to your point, are there some things that aren't, you know, that are probably core to the mission but aren't significant in terms of the programmatic? I'm sure there are some, human resources being a good example. We don't need a strategic plan for the human resources division in my mind. But when we're talking about the stuff that's going to drive outcomes and output for the public, that we need to have, we need to know what the goals and objectives are, we need to know how they're going to measure them, and we need to keep coming back to it so we see how they're doing and how those goals and objectives are going to evolve.
Follow up. Chairman Jones, Representative Mercer. Would you then foresee down the road us delineating or structuring House Bill 2 so it maps to the various programs that we have metrics for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beattie, I think it will be important to launch this effort and then do a number of things. We certainly can come back. If we enact this and this is in the code, we can further delineate. If we want to exclude certain things from strategic planning by you know, subject, we could do that. And I think you're right that we could have reporting requirements and other things tied to it. But I think this is likely, if we don't do anything, I think by the time we show up in January, assuming the voters send us back in January 2025, we will have had the first annual performance report. We will have a very good sense of how all agencies have responded, the utility of it, and any sort of changes that we think would be appropriate. But we've got to start somewhere, and I think that this is it. But just like everything else, you know, we've got to learn from what the lived experience is.
Follow up.
Chairman
Jones, Representative Mercer, so DNRC provided some information here, and I may have missed it somewhere in the fiscal note. Is there any, do you know how many programs they envisioned coming up with these metrics with?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beattie, I don't know how many programs led to their conclusion that it was going to take a total of 1,500 staff hours to do the first report. I don't think there's anything in here that is illuminating on that.
Thank you. A question for Mr. Torrington.
Redirect, Mr. Torrington.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie.
Chairman Jones, Mr. Torrington, sir, you're the stuckey on this bill. How many programs do you see in DEQ that you would be developing metrics for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie, all of them. To say that HR wouldn't be involved is fundamentally not understanding what this would require.
A follow-up. How many is all of them?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Beattie, in my agency, I have 420 people.
Follow-up. I think you misunderstand my question. I want to understand how many distinct programs you would be having developed these metrics for. I just don't understand the structure of your agency, and you're just a test case here because you're the agency that's available.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie, so I have program 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 80, and 90. So that's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's Section C programs. Aside from that, I'd probably have 4 to 5 sub-programs in every of the section budget programs. So we're talking about 20 efforts.
Thank you.
Okay, additional questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mercer, so I am concerned mostly about the public participation in the management of an agency. You know, through your efforts, and I do want to compliment you for this, through your previous efforts, in Section A, it's a totally different scene than it was 4 years ago when I was previously on Section A, in that we did begin to see some more or less strategic plans, certainly goals and objectives and some metrics. And those who didn't, we sort of pushed them to go away and come back and bring us back something, and most did. Still needs a lot of work, and that's mostly because of what you've done. So I would compliment you on that. And so I mostly find favor in this bill, except the piece that talks about the public, where should I be here? Public interaction. I thought you said that was Section 3, but anyway, you know where you know what I'm talking about.
I do, and I'll try to find it.
Oh, here it is, top of page 4, then bottom of page 3 into the top of page 4. And what I'm concerned about is the public has an opportunity to interact with us on the goals that we set for these agencies or the policies that we set for these agencies. But it seems like it might be overstepping in. It could reduce the fiscal note. If perhaps they weren't also engaged in the process of micromanaging what an agency is supposed to be doing. And so I'm wondering about your thoughts on that, and can that be a streamlined? Why is it even necessary to get the public involved in commenting on the execution of something they already commented about at a higher level?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, thanks for the question. So there were two. In the version of this bill 2 years ago, there was a requirement that there be an employee consultation requirement that seemed to me to be a really good idea, but it took on, there was an opposition, and so I abandoned that. The public part I thought was important to say, yeah, the public can participate in the budget process, but if you really want to understand the Department of Commerce's budget, you're going to have to read the documents, and you're going to have to watch the hearings. You're going to have to listen to the questions. You might even have to come show up. And about all you would do would be to come in and say, hey, Section A, you know, I think you should be focusing them on this or that. This plan will actually be what it is that the executive branch proposes in terms of what it's going to say it wishes to achieve and how it wishes to measure it. And I like the idea of putting the plan out kind of in the spirit of Articles 2, Section 9, and say, how can the government be harmed from that sunshine? How can the government be harmed from putting it out and letting the public comment. And as you know, I exempted it from judicial review. So this is all on the executive branch. If Mr. Dorrington gets 13 comments from people about his strategic plan and he says, I don't agree with any of this, he's absolutely free to ignore it all. But I think we see this when people come to the microphone. We learn things when the public comes in and says, I think you should oppose this or support this for the following reason. And I think when we start talking about agency goals and objectives and what the performance measures should be, I think there's a chance that some member of the public will have a kernel of truth or insight that has been missed otherwise. And let me use this as the analogy. I know when this administration took over, they impaneled various public board, public citizen groups. They put 4 or 5 or 10 people and say, we want you to help on the transition work for the Department of X. And the whole purpose of that was to take experts in the field and say, you know what, you could really help us figure out what it is that we need to be doing. I think that by putting these strategic plans out, it allows people that really know the issues and maybe some who don't necessarily know them that well, weigh in and say, here are my thoughts. And again, if it was binding or if somebody could litigate the issue and say, I had something and it doesn't appear that the agency took it seriously, then I think that that would be reason for pause. The other thing is that since this bill has amended the requirement that that happen before we reconvene, I guess I'd say I'd encourage us to move the bill forward. And if this becomes something people are worried about, I mean, it's certainly not the most fundamental thing in the bill. So if people said it's got to go, I'm willing to take it out. I think it's worth leaving it in and at least seeing how it works for a cycle. And since it's not going to be operable until the next plan, which is after the next legislative session, we could catch up and deal with that in 2 years if need be.
Follow up.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mercer, maybe not really a question at this point, but simply a comment, and that is I'd be much more favorably disposed to the bill, and I think we could save some money on this if we didn't have that public piece. It made perfect sense for you to have the employee piece in there because they are the ones executing the plan, which, of course, the public doesn't do. So I would urge you to rethink that a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, Representative Mercer, I'm wondering, how did you decide to leave it up to the agencies to do basically their own strategic planning? Because I'm thinking kind of a different way to go around it would be to have maybe within the governor's office or something, but like an entity that facilitates and helps with all of the different parts of government. Like they're experts in outcome, not the technical part of outcome measurement, but the, you know, setting of goals and objectives and actually coming up with meaningful outcome measures. I guess I'm wondering how you decided to leave it up to them instead of having a standalone unit, I guess, that maybe does that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillette, I think the answer is that part of the framework is something that has been in place from the last session to this one. And my thought process there is that I heard some of the negative comments last time revolved around, this is the legislature trying to tell the executive branch what it should be doing with respect to elements of the plan. And I kept trying to say, no, all we're trying to do is say, you need to develop a plan. You need to, it's on you. Now, we're going to be very interested in it, and it's going to help us in our oversight work and help us in the IBCs, but we're not going to write the plan, and you're going to have full discretion to develop the plan, right down to taking the employee piece out and leaving the public piece in. So I guess my thought was the more bureaucratic it became, the more we were trying to say, all right, so you have to have plans, but then we want somebody other than the agencies themselves to have some sort of responsibility. I think there are arguments in favor of that, but I guess at the end of the day, I'm trying to keep this as streamlined as possible, knowing full well that you know, it's still going to be an evolving process. And that strikes me as the kind of thing that, you know, if we can get it implemented and see what it looks like for 4 years or so, then we can take stock of it and maybe have Mr. McKeever, who has been observing this process, and I think will, when the bill comes over on the Senate side, I'm hoping that he is going to come in and say, this is going to be so helpful in terms of our program evaluation work, because we're going to have clarity in terms of what it is that the agency is trying to do in a variety of areas. So anyway, long and short of it is, I think this is, it's baby steps for now, and let's take stock of where it is down the track. But I was trying to keep it as streamlined as possible.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. One more.
Go ahead, follow
thank
up.
You. Yeah, I guess I was just thinking that it seems like it might be overwhelming for them a little bit because they're not used to thinking with that mindset. And if I know in organizations I've been a part of, we hire outside consultants that come in and walk us through that process. And, you know, it's weeks and weeks and months and months. But that's just kind of where I was going, I guess, with that. I have a question for Mr. Dorrington.
Mr. Dorrington.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dorrington, and I'm looking at, from Section B, I'm looking at the DPHHS objective.
Oh, gosh.
Ah.
I'll be honest, I have this much experience on DPHHS.
No, but no, no, that's, no, that's okay. I was actually just going to ask you what your own was for your own.
I'm sorry, own.
So for DEQ, I'm guessing you have an objective.
Oh, I do. Mr. Yes. Chair, I sent it to Quinn already, and he sent it out to you. You have it okay. In your inbox.
I just probably haven't looked at it. Can you just tell me what it is? It's like one sentence, probably.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, under Section C, DEQ OGSM. And what is your question? I apologize.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dorrington, it would be the O part, the very first one, the
you know, oh, the gotcha. OG. Yeah. Sorry.
Of the O.
Yeah.
What is
I
that?
I had it pulled up on my phone. Just
no
one
problem.
More. Mine is my agency mission statement, Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, to champion a healthy environment for thriving Montana.
Okay, could you give me one example of how you measure a healthy environment in Montana as part of your dashboard?
Absolutely. So a strong-running agency is, Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, strong-running agency is able to accomplish that. Under my OGSM, when I came on in January 21, the first thing I did is set an objective for every employee in my agency, which is 10 proactive outbound touches per month, which results in about 3,800, 4,000 proactive outbound touches per month for my whole agency. So my objective in my January to June 2023 OGSM is 25,000 proactive outbound touches. What that means is every employee in my agency is making 10 unsolicited efforts to someone we impact in order to solve problems, connect, maintain, and in this case, we could be issuing a protective permit, we could be bringing someone into compliance, we could be advancing elements of a very very complicated and strategic public project, Butte Superfund, all of which results in actual movement forward. And I can share more if you'd like.
No, that's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, and by the way, I think, you know, your customer service has been stellar. You've always been really available to me, and I really appreciate your leadership.
Sure.
And I guess I was also kind of wondering in your objective, it says create like a healthy Montana, and I think it's probably environmental. And so I was just curious if you had any goals of how to measure what is a healthy environment in Montana. But I think what you're talking about are process goals, not necessarily process measures, not necessarily outcome measures of like what is health. But I think it kind of gets to Representative Mercer's question and his point, to be honest with you, is that, you know, we don't have, and it's not unique to you. I feel like it's in DPHHS too, that we don't really have measures of when do we know we've had success, I guess is what it is. So thank you.
Okay. additional questions? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
It's been a long day, and many of you have heard me talk about this many times, so I think I'm going to spare you of that. If any of you have individual questions, I would be happy to answer them. I did want to come back to the comment on human resources when Representative Beattie was saying, do we have to measure everything? And I want to make this point because this goes to the heart of what Representative Gillette just said. There are outcomes, right? And the outcome is we reduce recidivism by X percent. That's an outcome. And if we need to wall off something, human resources is a perfect thing to wall off, in my view. It's important work. I'm not minimizing the work. But that's something that if an agency had to say, we just don't have time to have for every single program, we don't have time in this first strategic plan to do all this, that would be something we could wall off. Because at the end of the day, the people that are hired to do the work by the people in human resources are important to the mission. But that's process. Posting jobs, interviewing candidates, bringing people on board, having more FTE and fewer vacancies. All important stuff, but it's process. It's not going to drive the mission, right? What we want to do is be able to say, if we're going to reduce recidivism by 5% over a biennium, that is an outcome measure. And that's, the people allow that to happen. But we're not, this is not focused on process. This is focused on outputs and outcomes. And there's a difference. And that's all part of this transformation in the thought process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that closes the hearing on this bill. We're going to do executive action on House Bill 45 and House Bill 190. Yep, we'll give our clerk just a minute to get spun up.
Also, it might be considered too several as well.
Quinn has a committee bill, so let's do that after the
Okay, we got Reed and Regeer.
She's got the spin of death.
Hopkins has disappeared. Oh, there he is. Okay. Falk is here. Hopkins is here. I hope this vice chairmanship is a line in my obituary, because it's a pain in the butt.
Remember, Hastings is missing as well, so you have to proxy there as well.
Oh, I almost got it.
Okay, Vice Chair Keenan.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 45.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 45. It's the bill we initially heard today. I know there's not amendments, so is there discussion on the bill? Discussion on the bill. Okay, so can I voice vote this bill, or do I need to roll call vote this bill? Raise your hand if you're not going to vote for it. We're going to voice vote. All those in favor of House Bill 45 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill passes unanimous by those that are present.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on 190?
Yes.
190.
It's been moved to pass on House Bill 190. I know there's not amendments. Discussion on the bill. We just heard the bill. Representative Kerr Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that this bill delights me to no end. That's all. Thank you.
I'm just disappointed there's not an amendment. But anyway, additional discussion, Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate Representative Mercer's effort to try to do this. As I mentioned on the floor, I was involved in one of these processes about 48 years ago, and it was, shall we say, rather frustrating. And I suspect that when he gets into this process a little farther, that hairline of his will be moving back a little farther because he's be ripping it out. But on a more serious note, one of the biggest problems you have with government agencies is that government agencies really are not output-oriented for the most part. They are process-oriented, and you actually saw a performance of that here just a few minutes ago with Mr. Dorrington. He talked about creating an environment with positive touches, and all of that was taking place while he was starting off as a director. And at the same time, his subdivision bureau completely collapsed, and they didn't move subdivision applications out for months and months and months, and things really fell apart. So part of this bill, and I think it's most important part, is you're going to have to essentially recreate or teach agencies to think differently than they do now. And if you can get to that process over 6 or 8 or 10 years, because it will take more than that, you'll have made a major move. Another problem with agencies is that they often think of program inputs as outputs. And I can remember when I was involved in this process back in the 70s, we would get stuff back in from the highway department. They wouldn't talk about the number of miles of highway that they repaved. They'd talk to you about the tons of gravel that they bought. Well, you know, maybe that was meaningful to them, but it really wasn't very meaningful in terms of the output of the program. So I really appreciate what Representative Mercer is doing here, and I think we should push this bill across the floor. Thank you.
Okay, additional discussion. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, just get along and be friendly and all. I'd like to move a motion to amend the bill.
So, given that we don't have amendments.
Well, yes, I'm willing to offer a conceptual amendment.
So, I think, I'll hear your conceptual amendment, but I think it's unlikely that we're going to put amendments on. But what is your conceptual?
It's a very, very simple amendment, Mr. Chair, and that is in Section 4 of the bill to eliminate item number 5 and 6. That's it. Basically, it's about the public. The thing I'd mentioned in my question.
Okay, first I'll ask Ms. Johnson if that's doable as a conceptual.
So my understanding, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hamilton, is you would strike on page 3, line 27, subsection 5, and then the entirety of subsection 6 on page 4 that runs until line 14?
That is correct.
Okay, I understand that.
Okay, discussion on the conceptual amendment. Representative Mercer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm torn because I'd love to have a unanimous vote, but I also think that this is such a minimal burden on the agency, and I can't tell from the fiscal note how much they actually think is going to be incurred from allowing the public to comment. And I think that there is a chance that we will hear something, they will hear something from the public that they will say, you know, we hadn't thought of it that way, but maybe we should have, and we should at least make that part of our thought process. So it just seems like it continues to make government more transparent, and I just don't think the burden is so great on the agency or the cost. So I guess I just do not see this amendment yet.
Representative Beattie.
I am shocking myself to be in agreement with my friend across the aisle there on this particular issue. Actually, both of my friends, and I'm not talking about the two Hamiltons, but rather Representative Fitzpatrick as well. You know, what Representative Mercer seeks to do here, what we seek to do here, is a fundamental change in the way government agencies and bureaucracies think about things. I think that we are overly optimistic about how fast that kind of a cultural change can take place, but yet it must start. I would say that what I would foresee here as this goes forward is the agencies present these plans. Obviously, they have a requirement to provide them to us. I would expect us to be holding hearings on those plans as well, with ample opportunity for public comment at that time. I think that having public comment during the development process is unnecessary, because the agencies will be learning from us the feedback we give them, and the public will be able to engage at that time. So I think that I support Representative Hamilton's amendment, because I think that we need to make this as easy for the agencies to accept this mission as they can with the resources they have, so that we can move this along on the long path it's going to take to get where we need to get.
Okay, two more discussions on the amendment.
I defer. I mean, I think the balance of the bill is more important than that. So I will accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Well, in that case, Representative Hamilton, on your amendment that is probably likely to pass, close.
Well, I won't kill it here by talking too much, but I would just point out that we can do this, the public review, the public input in the IBCs.
Thank you.
Another good invention.
Are we okay with a voice vote on this amendment? Voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Passes unanimous by those that are present. Ms. Johnson, you heard the amendment. Vice Chair Keenan.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 190 as amended once.
Discussion on the once amended bill. Representative Hamilton.
I really like this bill. Vote green.
Okay. Well, that question has been called. I heard it out there somewhere. Is there? Can I? Can I voice vote this bill? Are people opposed to this bill? Okay. Seeing no opposition, all those in favor of House Bill 190 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimous by those that are present. Okay, members, we have one possible reconsider per Representative Schillinger. Or take the bill off the table, I guess would be the deal.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would move that we take House Bill 270 by Kastmeyer off the table for reconsideration, and with an amendment to be offered.
And you have amendment to offer.
Right.
So it's been moved to take House Bill 270 off the table. See nobody jumping up to talk. Can we do a voice vote on bringing this off the table? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is off the table. So now we need to probably move to pass on the bill. Vice Chair Keenan.
I move due pass on House Bill 270.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 270, and there is amendment. Representative Schillinger, on your amendment, unless you want the Vice Chair to do it.
Mr. Chair, he's pretty good. I'll just defer.
Okay. Vice.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I move to amend House Bill 270 with amendment House Bill 0270.001.004.
Okay. Ms. Johnson, would you explain what the amendment does?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It revises the sunset on this Operation State Special Revenue Account to be 2026, June 30th of 2026.
So it effectively adds 1 year. If you remember when this was brought to us, it was adding, well, it was, wasn't sunsetting, it was going way out. Their discussion was they did not necessarily need the money right away, but they were concerned if they didn't have a little bit more time beyond the biennium, they couldn't complete their negotiations. Representative Schillinger, you want to speak to your amendment briefly?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. All this does is allows the DEQ to 2026 to work out modifying some hard rock mining fees with various players in that. And this has been ongoing for quite a while, but in visiting with Director Dorrington, he is confident that they can move the ball forward and get the job done in that time frame.
Okay, additional discussion on the amendment. Question's been called on the amendment. Can I voice vote the amendment? All those in favor of amendment HB 2700100004 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes by those that are present.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 270 as amended once.
Okay, discussion on the bill that's been amended.
Question's
been called. Again, can I voice vote this bill? Okay. So all those in favor of House Bill 270 as once amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 270 as once amended passes unanimous by those that are present. I believe that's all the work we had planned on doing for today.
We have
a six bill drop that we're going to work on tomorrow morning. We also have some bills on the sheet. I believe House Bill 669 by Representative Mercer. I believe you hope to have your amendment tomorrow on 669. I believe House Bill 772, I think Representative Mercer hopes to have his amendment by tomorrow. 722, and I apologize. So there's two bills there. Along with, obviously, the six bills, we'll look at those six bills as well. There's also a potential we will look to take off the table, potentially House Bill 321 and 332. So that might be tomorrow's action. I think we need to come in about, let's see, what would we plan on? I think we set the committee on the floor at 8:30, correct? So we'll be in at 8:30. Please come early and get your amendments in order, because we're if you're going to amend these bills, we got to get the amendments in order, or you're waiting for your amendments will become the death knell for these bills. In fact, after tomorrow, I think we probably should quit amending bills because it could possibly end them. So, Representative Mercer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if Ms. Johnson can...
And the correct answer is tomorrow, Ms. Johnson.
a deadline for amendments tomorrow morning?
No. What's the latest date a bill could have an amendment potentially pass through the process and successfully pass the floor, get through first reading, second reading, and third reading after being amended?
I would say tomorrow is a guarantee and the day after is a maybe.
Okay. So when do I have to have something to you for your review and into edit? Is it sometime tonight or early tomorrow morning?
Well, I prefer tonight, my editors, I know, would as well. It would be difficult to get something in the morning and to have edit turn it around by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Are we, Mr. Chairman, are we going to do any EA in the afternoon?
Representative, we potentially...
I'm bargaining, Mr. Chairman.
We potentially good, but remember, that means you don't get read across, that you don't get first reading on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
So that means without first reading on Wednesday, you get first reading on Thursday, and unless they have a couple boards and they're split apart, you do risk falling over dead, but I guess...
We don't want that. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, with that, Representative Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to ask your favorable consideration of a committee bill to accelerate 5 capital projects at Montana State Prison. I think everybody in here is aware of the fact that we've got some major management problems down there with lack of staffing. We've also got a number of housing and other capital facility projects, some of which are security in nature. I have talked with several of you individually about the bill. Earlier today, Chairman Jones, Representative Mercer, Representative Hopkins, and I took that list of capital projects and winnowed it down to 5 projects. Now, the purpose of this bill is really simply to accelerate it, to give the Division of Architecture and Engineering a couple more months in which to get this stuff designed and bid so that the things can get done as quickly as possible. It is even conceivable that some of these smaller projects might get done yet this summer or into the fall. The projects that are on the list, the first one, I believe, are the fencing upgrades that they need around the prison. They've got some problems with that system, and they need to get the thing fixed. They also have some problems with their red light warning system, and that needs to be repaired. That's the system that comes on if they're having an incident in a building. It's a way of signaling to the correctional officers that this is a trouble spot and needs to be addressed. The next item on the list is the low-side housing units. Those housing units were a disaster in 1970 when they were built, and they've gotten nothing but worse over time. This is an effort to try to expedite that process. I also put some language in the bill that says that architecture and engineering can go out of state to see if they can maybe find an existing plan for these units rather than essentially designing them from the ground up in consultation with the Department of Corrections. If they can do that, it might save a tremendous amount of time in the process. And then finally, there are 2 waterline projects at the prison. The one project will basically create more housing space in Unit F, and the other one basically is there to provide better fire protection for the facility. And I'll be happy to answer any questions. By the way, we do need to have a 75% okay on this to make it a committee bill, but if it becomes a committee bill, then it'll go through the standard process of having a hearing. There'll be witnesses and the like.
Okay, and I believe a draft bill has been handed out. Discussion on the possible committee bill. Representative Nave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this question is actually for you. Do we have the option, because I know these have already been, to some extent, through Section F, how much ability will we have to influence any of the projects on this list?
Representative Nave, I'm going to re-defer. I would say a lot of ability, but Representative Hopkins, since you are Representative F, sir, please speak to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nave. So you'll have double the opportunity to interact with. So the way that this bill is constructed, it will contain the projects in House Bill 5, which you will see when Sections F's work makes its way to full appropriations. Additionally, the projects will be listed here in this separate bill, saying that if this bill passes, then this bill controls everything that is in it. So you will have a hearing on this bill. You will have the opportunity to amend the projects in this bill. Additionally, when House Bill 5 comes through, you shall have double the run-through, right? Same thing, hearings, opportunity to amend, etc.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, additional discussion. Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this might be a question for you or the sponsor, and maybe this is a rookie legislator question, but tell me how this expedites this process, because we've gone through our process in Section F. So these projects have already been vetted through our section. We're going to be seeing them. How is this expediting things?
I'll answer that, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tuss, it expedites it because we can probably push a small bill like this through and maybe have it signed by the middle of March. If we wait for House Bill 5, it'll come at the final days of the session, and you won't see a signed bill until the middle of May. So basically what I'm trying to do with this bill is give architecture and engineering an additional 2 months to kind of get things going.
Okay, additional conversation. Representative Mercer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to, I guess this is a motion, I'm going to vote for this. I think F has already put all of these projects in its mix, and I agree that there's some value in trying to expedite these, both the large and the small, given what we have witnessed on our tour and what we have learned in the course of our hearings, both in D and then our joint hearing with F. And the only caveat that, it's not a caveat, the only observation I'm gonna keep saying every time I get a chance to, we've heard from the director now multiple times, this is three different times, that the low side build out is only gonna get us 32 additional beds. And I don't think, given our crime rates and given the various challenges that we face going forward, I just don't think that we are going to be able to have adequate secured facility capacity at Deer Lodge and at Shelby. I think there's going to have to be a plan to do something more. But having said that, that doesn't have anything to do with the importance of trying to expedite this. And so I'm on board with the motion.
Okay, so we've heard the motion to create a committee bill. You've seen a draft of what the committee bill will generally look like. Obviously, once the committee bill comes into existence, it'll be just like any other bill. Representative Vice Chair Caffaro.
Mr. Chairman, I've been gone a lot, I know, and with presenting other bills. Is this the first time the committee's seen this bill?
This, you're talking about this draft. Committee bill. Yes, this is the first time that the committee has seen the draft, although I will say that Representative Fitzpatrick has been more than prolific in talking to everyone about it.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, Ms. Johnson.
Yes, I just wanted to let the committee know that under House Rule 20-50, typically a three-quarters vote is required for a committee bill. However, in House Appropriations, it's a simple majority.
Okay. Vice Chair Caffaro.
Mr. Chairman, this is a question for the sponsor of this motion, Representative Fitzpatrick. I'm assuming that this bill is no different than what was in House Bill 5 as far as the projects go. The only thing that this bill accomplishes is moves up the date that they can start the projects. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Caffaro, absolutely correct. Okay. Nothing's different.
Thank you.
Okay, additional discussion. Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we vote yes on this, are we agreeing to hear this bill? That it's going to go through the regular process?
Yes. Okay. If we vote yes on this, a bill will come into existence. And we'll probably just assign Representative Fitzpatrick to carry the committee bill. So the committee's authorizing the drafting of a bill to be presented to us just like any other bill. The committee has more power than an individual. It can draft a bill later in the process. So that's when these type processes allow someone to draft a bill a little later in the process to have a bill come out later.
Okay, outstanding. Thank you.
Additional discussion? Okay, the motion has been made to do a committee bill. The description of the committee bill has been discussed. Do I need to do a roll call vote? All those in favor of creating a committee bill along the lines presented by Representative Fitzpatrick in the draft bill, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It passes unanimous. Ms. Johnson, your draft can, once it's satisfactory, start heading its way to edit, and it'll become our committee bill. And I believe the committee, without objection, is going to sign the committee bill to Representative Fitzpatrick. Okay, thank you. So 8:30 tomorrow morning, work on your amendments. And with that, we are adjourned till tomorrow.